Welcome to Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with the Prescription Playbook, a conversation about empowering and educating communities to prevent overdoses and end the opioid crisis. My name is Armando Miranda, and I'm a prevention specialist for the Prescription Playbook, and I'll be your host today. We are excited to welcome our guest, Megan Hanley, from the Tazewell County Public Health Department. She is an epidemiologist. Megan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing great. Yeah, I could just kind of jump right into it. You know, I always people to kind of introduce themselves. Like I mentioned, you're an epidemiologist for the Tazewell Public Health Department. How did you decide your career path? What has led you to be so involved in the efforts against substance misuse in your community?
Science has always kind of been my thing. When I was in undergrad, I actually completed my undergraduate degree with a molecular biology degree, which is more focused on like everything at the cellular level is really small. The way I use that now, the local health department has some responsibility with communicable disease. So like kind of like your weird illnesses and things like that. So I spend a lot of time using that side of my brain, but I am a people person. I love being around people. I'm extroverted. So when I finished my bachelor's degree, I wasn't quite sure where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. So I started a master's of public health degree online, which worked out really well because I was in the middle of the pandemic and you couldn't go anywhere. So I say a lot, I don't think very many people knew what epidemiology was before 2020. But that's the thing I love about public health is it takes science and it merges that with behavior change and people. And so another thing that I do in my free time, I've been an EMT for 8 years. And so that's where I first kind of that was the first time I was really exposed to substance use and substance use disorder. I have had a few family members that have walked through opioid use disorder. So that kind of all combined into a little bit of what I do now. So
kudos to you for being on the front lines. And we've heard so much in our communities. That's often where we see a lot of people interacting with the community members who are struggling with substance misuse. So we have worked closely in the past with the Partnership for Healthy Communities Coalition to kind of help in community outreach events like drug take back. Why is it important for folks to participate in like safe disposal? Does that play a huge aspect in your kind of conversation, just getting it out into the community about how we can keep each other safe?
Yes. So I think it's incredibly important for people to be practicing safe medication disposal. And here's the why. In Tazewell County specifically, 2/3 of our related to substance use are adolescents who have misused a large quantity of either prescription or over-the-counter medications. So I think a lot of times we think, oh, it's opioids, it's heroin, it's illicit substances, but 2/3 of what we see in Tazewell County are adolescents misusing prescription or over-the-counter, like your Tylenol, your Benadryl type medications. From a prevention perspective, which is like the basis of what public health is, right? It's incredibly important for parents, grandparents, adults to be cognizant of where they're keeping medications, you know, whether you allow your preteen to manage their antidepressant prescription, those kinds of things. Just because it's a reduction, it's an ability to prevent harm.
You kind of answered another question that I had there. I mean, from your background being a first responder and an epidemiologist, you know, what kind of advice could you give to parents to maybe open up that conversation about safe use? I mean, you mentioned that very oftentimes overdoses are caused by adolescents who are taking large quantities of prescription medication. How do you think we should approach that conversation as community members, as adults with young people in our lives and as parents?
Yeah, so I grew up in the era of you're fine, pull yourself up, mm-hmm. shove it down, and move on. Thankfully, I think it's wonderful that that narrative has changed, but it's incredibly important for adults to realize that life is hard and a lot of times it sucks because we live in a broken world. Mm-hmm. And there are many different ways that people can choose to cope with things. A lot of times, unfortunately, in adolescence, it's coping by using substances because they would like to end their life in some way. And it's incredibly important for adults to realize that, A, and then B, do something about it and be a part of the positive change as opposed to the negative outcome.
At the point of the podcast, we really have is to kind of have these conversations with community members to figure out, you know, what are the differences that we see amongst communities? But more often than not, we just see the same kind of thing in place, the stigma that often leads to like a lot of open conversations that haven't been had, or the lack of conversation to be had with adolescents. And that's kind of what creates those gaps where, you know, unfortunately people might find themselves in, right? So I think you hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, like I said, our goal is to help end the stigma. It's, you know, it's to open up those conversations and to help adolescents feel informed first and foremost so that they, you know, it's not such a daunting conversation with parents first. You know, you have a kind of a unique skill set. You know, you've kind of talked about how you really see things from the top down as an epidemiologist. You're out in the field working as somebody on the front line. And then you also do a lot of outreach work with the Partnership for Healthy Communities. Can you kind of speak to that effect and why you feel like coalitions are such an important aspect of, you know, your community and kind of grassroots organizing for something against something like this?
I kind of live by the phrase, if you're ever like looking for a job or you're talking to an adult about jobs or anything like that, they're always like, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true in many ways, but one is we're all trying to, at least in the substance use world and in the public health world, we're all trying to affect positive change. So why should the health department run on this street and law enforcement run on this street and social work run on this street when we could all do the same work? We're all working towards the same goal. So let's use all of our skill sets and do it together. So with the Partnership for a Healthy Community, I mean, that's I'll just share a little bit of the diversity of that group. There's health departments represented. There's substance use and mental health treatment centers represented. There's hospital systems represented, Prescription Playbook, which is a prevention organization. There's law enforcement represented through one of the drug task forces. Parole is represented. If you wanted to do anything related to substance use, there may be someone in that group who's like, hey, I've either done that before, or I know someone who could help you do that, or we could all do it together. And so really, truly, like, it's just this concept of why run by yourself when you could run a relay race?
Something that's really resonated towards me, just being a part of the coalition, it really does seem like just community members just like who care about what's happening. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you have that kind of passion, and if you mentioned in so many different fields, it's about finding the kind of collective narrative to kind of strive towards
mm-hmm.
that. And if it's meeting once a month or every so often to just have events in the community where it's able to raise awareness, I think we're able to kind of reach our mission a little bit quicker because we're
mm-hmm.
working together and we're kind of getting rid of those barriers. So that's really, really great. And thank you for that. I think I want to kind of circle back to maybe some of the trends that maybe you've been seeing in your community. So what are some trends in substance misuse that you've seen in your community among youth and like the role that community members and parents play prevention as a whole?
Yeah, so in the state of Illinois, and this just came out a couple of weeks ago, there's what's called the Illinois Youth Survey. And it is a survey that's, I think, tacked on to an end of some of the standardized testing. Basically just asking students at eighth grade through high school, senior year of high school, what is your perspective on blank? In the last 30 days, have you used blank? Or how often have you used blank? And from that, I haven't like totally dug into it in its entirety yet, but the big things are vaping, e-cigarettes, alcohol access, and then the perception of marijuana as being a non-dangerous or addictive substance.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of like the three, at least in our community, coming out of that survey. And then with all of that, there's questions about access. So if you wanted to get a vape and you were under the age of 18, which is the legal age in Illinois to buy one, how would you get it?
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the past like 10, 15 years, your access route has been socially. Oh, I got it from a friend. My older sibling bought it for me and gave it to me. That kind of thing. Now in Tazewell County, at least over 40% of students are saying, oh, I got it from a gas station or a vape shop, or which is a whole another issue. I mean, the social access is something that we are always probably going to deal with, right? But from a public health standpoint, and then from kind of a law enforcement perspective, why are we not carding people when they're going to purchase a vape, you know, or allowing students to buy alcohol at a gas station? Why are these kinds of things occurring? So that's a concern as of right now.
I think for all of our listeners and the parents who are listening, I think it's sometimes we have to go over our heads because we want to believe cause might just be from the social access, right? You're getting it from your peers or somebody who knows somebody, and you really don't like to think that, you know, somebody who's underage could walk into a smoke shop and buy tobacco products that easily, especially after we've had such a change in legislation now that the age is 21, you know, we think would be a little bit even harder to access. But to see that it's been an increasing trend and that it is really something that's not really reinforced by the policy makes it a really interesting conversation to have in our communities. And for me and from my perspective, you know, it's how do we enforce that? How can we enforce smoke shops and other kind of gas stations to enforce kind of carding procedures? Because it shouldn't be that easy,
right?
But parents as well. I know I've seen a huge rise in, like, I can't put my exact finger on what they're called, but it's kind of like hidden in plain sight. That's what it's called. So it's parents even identifying what a vape might look like. And I think that's been a big conversation in some of the communities I've worked with. It's like, oh, I didn't even know that's what a vape looked like, because the technology has been changing so fast. They now look so much different than what you think a normal cigarette would look like, or what vape cartridges used to look like in the past. And now they come in different colors. They can look like highlighters. And so I think a big part of our process, you know, through the Prescription Playbook and other programs that we're kind of associated with, is like, how can we let parents be aware that this is what they're this is what they look like, this is how students are having access to them. And I think you mentioned that the IYF data is going to be able to reinforce a lot of the data, just to like show parents like, hey, this is where you're getting it. And also just like talk to, when we have people at our table who are in law enforcement, it's really important for them to see that data as well. You know, to say like, hey, this isn't this problem within schools, it's a problem that within the community. How can we band together and figure out a solution to it? Is that it's really interesting to hear about like how that's a trend that you have in your community, in your county, and it's something we're seeing across the state, something systemic to that effect.
And I think it's important to, like, I hit on the enforcement side of things, and I know that young people don't like to hear the word enforcement or being told what to do, but really, truly, it's unfortunate that the marketing is targeted at young people because they're in a spot in their development that they don't necessarily have the capacity to discern, oh, this is something that could impact my physical body for the rest of my life. So I'm really big on, it's a protection thing. It's not a, you can't do that thing. It's a, we want you to be successful later on in life. And so we're not giving you access to that until you hit a certain age where you hypothetically have the ability to make good decisions.
and I think you touched on a little bit too. It's like the perception that other students have of their peers. If they think that it's a lot more common thing happening, I think they might feel a little bit more inclined to experiment, or even, again, harder to discern what products are specifically targeted at them or made for them, if they believe everybody else in their, in their, you know, in their immediate social circle might be using them or getting them to whatever effect they might be getting them at, which I think is really, it's a thing we've tried to circulate in posters too. It's like, you guys are overestimating by like over a third, two thirds at times in certain schools. It's like, no, it's like youth itself is not actually as high as you think it is, which I think is also sometimes when we talk to parents, it's the positive thing. It's like, you know, students actually aren't using it as much as you think that they are. And it's okay to be a little bit frightened about that conversation, but it's like, you can trust your students if you feel like you can have a conversation with them and get rid of some of that stigma. And I guess that kind of opens up the conversation to kind of policy. So, you know, what direction would you like to see the country or state take to better support communities suffering from substance misuse? Like, what changes in either local or just state policy would you like to see?
That's a good question. Something that I can be passionate about. I'll start with this. I think policy-wise, and this is incredibly hard, but we continue to see new substances kind of pop up. The first one that comes to mind is kratom. The hard thing about it is when they come up and they're new, they're not regulated by anyone. And so there are no laws, there's no scientific studies. So for kratom, for example, I think there's, I've done some research on it, and there's a handful of like maybe 10, 15 scientific studies that claim that it could potentially cause dependence and be addictive in nature, which if you read the studies, it makes a whole lot of sense. It binds to an opioid receptor in the brain. There's the science nerd coming out. But we have these things come on the market, and you can buy it on Amazon, and you can buy it at the gas station, and it's this nice herbal tea that'll help you sleep at night. So I think I would love the state and even just the government in general to take a little bit more of a stronger look at like some of these novel type substances. K2 would be another one. The diamond shrooms that were just recalled a few months ago. There's just a whole, I feel like somebody's just sitting in a closet somewhere like, what could we do with this plant-based
Yeah.
thing? That would be one. The other would be I wish there was a way to support law enforcement in actually holding gas stations, liquor stores, smoke shops accountable to follow these age limits. We're incredibly lucky that we haven't seen negative effects in terms of death in a lot of places, in a lot of communities. Like I know in Tazewell County 15 years ago, alcohol-related deaths in teens was like off the charts. And there are a few people in some conversations that are concerned that potentially that could be rearing its ugly head again. And a lot of the prevention work that was done 15 years ago needs to be redone. So I just wish from a like a compliance standpoint that municipalities were equipped properly to help keep that kind of stuff accountable as far as ages and access and that kind of thing.
That was really great. And I really appreciate and kind of your insight as to like where we can kind of have support from a policy perspective. It far too often it takes too long for there to be any kind of regulatory standards on things on the market. And it's much more, you know, we end up kind of living in the effect state of it. I know when I was in undergrad, the big thing that started to kind of come up was CBD. And that was a whole new world. You know, it was sold to anybody and everybody, you know, at any kind of smoke shop, and we really didn't understand. There really wasn't anything out about if it was safe. There wasn't anything out about whether or not what kind of derivative it was in connection to THC, but we knew that it was like legal, quote unquote. So it really existing in that gray and not fully understanding that makes it really difficult, I guess, like from our perspective as well, right? To kind of add that into sometimes some of our outreach work is like, you know, we're not always informed either as to what's out in the community or out in certain smoke shops because we don't hear about it until it's, you know, like you said, until it's a little bit into that next phase of like, oh, now we're seeing the effect that you know, to what you were saying as to create. I'm like, oh, it might be causing dependency. And is it now a time to kind of take back a time to take a look? So yeah, I definitely understand that we need to be a little bit more, I would hope we'd be a little bit more rigid with our guidelines in order to kind of stop that from happening. And I agree completely with you that, yeah, if we need to revisit some our connection with local law enforcement to feel like they can also feel like they're doing their job and keeping communities safe, I think what very often than not is that it kind of slips through the radar, it slips by the wayside. So it's figuring out ways to kind of get them at the table and figuring out ways that we can support them with the kind of correct information to make, you know, enforcement a little bit easier. As we kind of start to kind of wrap up here, kind of tail into the last few questions I have for you, what flagship events can our listeners kind of look out for in Tazewell? I almost said Tazewell. In Tazewell, in Peoria, that they can kind of add to their agenda over the next few months, if it's in relation to drug take back, which is happening at the end of October, or any other community events where we can, you know, just support our recovery community.
September is National Recovery Month. So, there's a lot of different nonprofits and treatment organizations that do some great things during that month. But I think the biggest part just with that and Overdose Awareness Day is just talking about it. Like September is National Recovery Month, and there are individuals who should be celebrated for overcoming and working through some of their dependency on different substances. You mentioned Drug Take Back Day in October, at the end of October. That's huge. We, as a county, task our local law enforcement with kind of promoting that day on their own. Like, hey, Pekin, Illinois, we're taking, medication that you need to dispose of from this time to this time at this location. And our law enforcement are really great partners with that. And then as a health department, we try to collect the number of pounds that have been removed just as a benchmark. The other thing that happens in October 23rd through 31st is Red Ribbon Week, which is kind of an old school substance use prevention thing, but we brought it back at the health department the last couple of years. The last year we brought a speaker into six of our middle school and high schools to do an assembly and kind of talk about what it looks like to live drug-free and the freedom that comes with that. But this year we're looking to do some more like activity within the school. So we're going to provide some resources and some activities to schools, and hopefully I have some schools that are going to participate, but hopefully a good number of them choose to participate, and then we'll do some giveaways and some drawings and stuff like that. But the theme of Red Ribbon Week this year is Life is a Movie, Film It Drug Free. So that's kind of fun. They always have a fun theme. So that's really just a good time for students to make, hopefully make a positive decision to choose to live drug free. And if you're a parent listening, that's a great opportunity for you to Google Red Ribbon Week. There are some different things that you can do at home as well that can kind of enhance that week. So
you want to let them know where they can find you on social media. I mean, as the PFHC or the Tazewell County Public Health Department.
Yeah, so the Tazewell County Health Department, we have a Facebook, we have an Instagram. You can find us on social media there.
So yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for being a part of the podcast and being a community member that we can often reach out to, partner with. And we appreciate you joining us in the fight to end the opioid epidemic. For more information on how we can work together to raise awareness on the opioid epidemic and end it once and for all, you can find us at ilhvp.org/prescription-playbook, as well as on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you again, Megan. I really, really appreciate you sitting in and giving us some insight as to what's going on in your county.
Awesome. Thanks. Have a great day.